Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. My guest for this morning is Amy Newmark, the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be discussing their latest holiday edition, The Power of Forgiveness. The book shares 101 stories about how to let go and change your life. Good morning, Amy. Welcome back to From My Mama's Kitchen. How are you doing this morning?
I am great. Thanks for having me back.
Wonderful. It is a pleasure to have you on the air. I'm sure you are busy celebrating Christmas, but let's talk about the book. The Power of Forgiveness is a perfect book for the holiday season.
Well, you know, you think about Christmas and how we're all getting together with family members, and that can be really great, but sometimes there are little resentments that have built up over the years that are festering, and then things will come out during the holiday season when everybody is put together, sometimes under stress. People are tired, stressed out from getting ready for Christmas, sleeping on couches in their families' homes, that kind of thing. And so sometimes you'll see these little things that kind of get bigger and bigger, and then I think as you go through the holiday season, sometimes these relationships with family or friends that have little problems, it will get bigger. And this is a great time to think about using the power of forgiveness to reset those relationships, to go back to how good they used to be. And I also think that this is a great time to be thinking about our New Year's resolutions. And I think that forgiveness is the forgotten New Year's resolution. And it's actually one of the easiest New Year's resolutions to implement because you can do it instantly. Losing 5 pounds might take you 2 months. But forgiving somebody can happen in 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. So true. In reading your book, my hope is that the readers and listeners of the show this morning will look at their personal situations through the lens of love. I think that's going to be very, very important.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that the people who you need to forgive for something are actually the people who you care about most. That's why you're so upset, right? You don't get upset when you don't have to forgive somebody, say, a clerk at a shop who was rude to you during the Christmas shopping season. It's your family members, your good friends, when they have wronged you, at least in your mind. Those are the ones you have more trouble forgiving because you had such a great relationship with them that it's more wounding when all of a sudden it doesn't seem to be as good. But those are also the people who are most important to you, and so that's why it's so important to pay attention to these stories about the power of forgiveness, because in this book we have so many people talking about how using forgiveness completely changed their lives and freed them, and how holding on to those resentments and that anger and that righteous indignation was actually really hurting their lives. And the stories are so dramatic about how people's lives were changed when they said, look, it doesn't matter who was right or who was wrong, or I understand your motivation. I know why you acted that way. I forgive you. Everything changes for them after that. And we have concrete examples in these stories of people who had dramatic improvements in their lives as a result of forgiving just one person.
How is Chicken Soup celebrating Christmas this year?
Well, around here, we are working away really hard. We don't take much time off for Christmas. We're looking ahead to next year for how we can continue to do the charitable programs that we did in 2014. So we are working on extending our program of helping shelters for dogs and cats because, you know, we're big proponents of adopting shelter animals, and we gave away tens of thousands of pounds of dog food and cat food last year, or this year as we're ending 2014, and we also gave away thousands of books so that people, when they adopted a dog or a cat, would go home with one of our best-selling dog or cat books, Bag of Our Dog or Cat Food. And we also mm-hmm. gave these shelters lots of extra food to feed the animals that were living there. And we are also right now sending out our royalty checks to the various charities that we've been helping, including the Alzheimer's Association, where we had a fabulous success in 2000.
Wonderful.
With a book that raised money for the Alzheimer's Association. Mm-hmm. So we are celebrating Christmas by working on our charity programs for next year and mm-hmm. by sending out checks to the charities that we supported in 2014. So that's fun. We like doing that.
That's wonderful. That sounds like a very interesting time of the year for all of you.
Yeah, it's good. There's nothing like giving stuff away to make you feel good, right?
Right, right. Wonderful. Looking at the stories that your book has to offer, and I'm sure there are thousands of people that have written in to be included in this wonderful book, you have actually helped those people by giving them the opportunity to release whatever they're feeling onto a piece of paper.
Oh, that's true. What happens is we get thousands of stories submitted for each, and we only publish 101. But many of the stories we don't publish are just as fabulous as the mm-hmm. ones that we do publish. We just can't fit them all. But we'll get letters from people later saying, my story wasn't published, but I have to tell you that just writing my story changed my life.
Yeah.
Because it does force people to confront what it is that's bothering them. And so it is tremendously freeing. And we're really proud of that fact, that we help so many people besides our readers and our story mm-hmm. contributors, but our story submitters will have their
right.
lives changed also by writing in. It does help sometimes to really get your thoughts down on paper. It helps you confront your feelings. It helps you organize your thoughts. And a lot of people will tell us that they wrote a story, we didn't use it, and then they went to the person who they wrote the story about and talked to them about it. And so
right.
they used the story just as if it had been published. They
mm-hmm.
took their word process story and they went over to the person and talked about it. And I'm sure that happened in many cases, even among the people whose stories we didn't take.
Right. That's the power of Chicken Soup, though. I think over the years, stories like this, or this category, so to speak, I think it's so powerful because it's not about the 101 stories that are in here. Obviously, these people deserve all the credit for what they've done. Their work are excellent and so forth. But for those thousands who took the time to write, it is an opportunity. Sometimes people are looking for just an outlet to kind of get it out of their system. And what Chicken Soup
did... Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's allowing
Yeah, you're right. Sometimes we get stories that are really just rants. And we look at it and we say, all right, well, this one's going to be deleted, but it's good you got it out of your system.
How did Chicken Soup manage to get Anthony Anderson to be the co-author for the book?
So that was a great story. Anthony's, one of his agents came to us early in 2014 and said, Anthony loves your dog food. His dogs love your food. They won't eat anything else. And he wants to do something with your company. He really likes what you're all about. And that makes sense to me because Anthony is a very thoughtful guy. He grew up in Compton, which is a slum area of the L.A. area, and he has been tremendously successful, but he's never forgotten his roots or his friends back in Compton, and now he has this big TV show, Black-ish, that's been a big hit. Mm-hmm. And he's been, you know, he's co-starred in many movies. He has a show on the Food Network. He's a very well-known, very well-liked guy, a pleasure to work with, and everybody says that in Hollywood, too. He's professional, smart, does a great job at anything he's asked to do. And so when he came to us and said he wanted to work more with us, we were thrilled. And the first thing we did was we invited him to come to Las Vegas in the summer of 2014 at a big pet show where we were showing off our newly designed packaging for our dog food and cat food. And he came and talked about our food and Chicken Soup for the Soul. At that point, we had decided that he would work with me on this book because he had his own story about forgiveness, and it's the first story in the book. And it's about him forgiving his father. His father maintained a relationship with his mother, but didn't really have a relationship with Anthony. he was in and out of his life as he was growing up. And then Anthony was not happy about the fact that his father didn't really want to get involved with him in a big way until he was a famous star. You know, and Anthony's attitude was, mm-hmm. where were you during all those years? But his father wasn't a bad guy. He just didn't know what to do. I mean, a lot of fathers mean well, but they just don't know how to handle being a father. And then they're embarrassed, and then they withdraw even more from their kids because they feel like they already blew it and they can't fix it. So the good thing was that when Anthony's father was dying, Anthony's mom said, you got to go talk to him. And Anthony went and talked to him, and Anthony forgave him on his deathbed. And Anthony said it was so freeing. It changed his life. Here he was, a big star, but this thing was hanging over him, the resentment towards his father, the things they hadn't said to each other. And so Anthony felt that his father forgave him for being resentful of his father's basic withdrawal from him, and Anthony forgave his father so his father could die in peace. And Anthony says that he now sleeps peacefully at night because he knows that he was able to release his father from a burden of guilt, and he thinks his father released him from a burden of anger. And so he says he no longer holds on to any negativity or pain, because Anthony told me he has the same issue with some of his friends from the old neighborhood. You know, now they're flocking around him because he's famous, and he has to not resent them for that. And so he feels that the power of forgiveness completely transformed him as a son, as a husband, as a father, and as a friend. So I thought it was a really powerful story, and I put it first in the book, of course. And Anthony and I, you know, talked a lot about the power of forgiveness. So that really helped me in choosing the stories for the book, because I was able to talk to Anthony about his firsthand experience with this.
Yeah. Why is self-forgiveness so important?
So I had talked to a psychologist before I made the book, and she said to me, you have to remember self-forgiveness, which I hadn't thought about. But, of course, it's very important because people are hard on themselves. I think that people are harder on themselves than anyone else is, right?
Yeah,
You're always negative about yourself. You're always beating yourself up about stuff. And there are people who are completely constrained in their lives because they've never forgiven themselves for a big mistake that they made, or their perception that they made a big mistake. And so we have a whole chapter in the book about self-forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very important message to people that, hey, you're not perfect. No one else expects you to be perfect. Humans are not perfect. So stop beating yourself up over being imperfect. That's how humans are. And so I think it's important, and I think that there are people who will read that chapter and will have epiphanies about how they should forgive themselves. And that's why we have 12 stories about self-forgiveness mm-hmm. in the book. It's that important.
In reading Anthony Anderson's story, the thing that came to mind is the fact that it's a humbling experience. He goes through the process of self-forgiveness himself, being able to open up. It's not about being macho, especially a person in his position, because he has already established a certain amount of achievement in his life, being a very successful actor and so forth. And, you know, when you get to a level in your life, why should I be doing all of this? That person should be coming to me first rather than me going the other way around.
That's true. I think that, well, you know, I think it's consistent with mm-hmm. with my view of Anthony and how people talk about him, which is that he's a great guy and he's not full of himself.
Yeah,
it is
right.
True. You have to put your ego aside, put any self-righteousness aside, and say, okay, I'm going to forgive this person. It's actually very empowering because...
Mm-hmm.
You're saying, I'm strong enough to do this. I'm strong enough to accept someone else's imperfections. And you're actually elevating yourself by forgiving somebody.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for people who want to reach out to others but is afraid to do so at this time?
Yeah, I think stories in this book provide readers with a great roadmap for doing that. I mean, the fact is that people are afraid to do it, but it's amazing how often the person on the other side is absolutely delighted to be approached, to start a conversation that can lead to mutual forgiveness. And there was a story in the book, I think it was story 35, and it was a man who had been mad at his brother for 5 years. He had been at a low point in his life 5 years before, and his brother had sent him an email, and it was just something in that email that he thought was snarky or negative. And so he hadn't spoken to his brother in 5 years. And he had written him a really, you know, angry email back then. Mm-hmm. And then he said, this is ridiculous. And he decided one Christmas that he was going to pick up the phone. And so he picked up the phone, called his brother, and left a message. And he said, Bob, I guess I'll start by saying I'm sorry. I said some things I regret. I want to wish you and Dolores a Merry Christmas. I realize you may not want to talk to me, but I thought I would try. So then what happened was that his brother, after a little while, got back to him and emailed him, and then he emailed back. And so, you know, that's the nice thing with technology today. You can do it in any way that you're comfortable. You could send a text. You could send an email. You could send a letter the old-fashioned way. You could leave a voicemail. But you have the ability to not just do a complete, you know, like face-to-face conversation for your first step. You could take that baby step, see if you get a response, but it's worth trying. And I believe that the stories in this book take you through the process, and you could pick the method that you think is right for your situation, because there are so many different approaches that you'll find in the 101 stories in The Power of Forgiveness, that you can find the way that you're comfortable trying with that person who you have to fix your relationship with.
So true. The timing could not have been better, because usually during the holiday season, it's the most wonderful time to just get together in a merry way and talk about this kind of issues.
Yeah, I think that this is the perfect time of year, and I think some people, after they get through Christmas, will say, all right, this is it. I've had it with this you know, strained relationship with my friend or family member. And so now they can go into New Year's saying, I'm going to fix it. That's my New Year's resolution. I'm going to fix it. And you know what? It's not that hard to do it, because this is a New Year's resolution that you can accomplish instantly. You know, this isn't that you have to exercise for the next 6 months or you have to diet for the next 6 months. You can send that email or pick up the phone or write that note instantly and already be on the path to forgiveness changing your life. It's an instantly accessible and achievable resolution.
So true. Once you pass through the initial anxiety and speak from the heart, I think everything else will take care of itself.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think what readers will learn from these stories is that this is absolutely doable, and it absolutely will change your life. And we do provide you with the steps to take in these stories. And we make it clear to you, you're going to learn from these stories that you're only hurting yourself by holding on to that anger or resentment, and that you're keeping yourself from moving forward. And sometimes things are outside of your control, but they're also outside of the control of the person you're mad at. And this forces you to look at those things and realize that maybe the person you're mad at wasn't trying to hurt you either. You know, you have to see through to the motivation. The strange thing is, as I was putting the book together, I was thinking, okay, who do I need to forgive? And I actually couldn't think of anybody. Mm-hmm. And that's so strange, but I think it's because I've been exposed to so many Chicken Soup for the Soul stories over the years. Yeah. I mean, I've been reading these stories now in depth for 7 years, and I've read tens of thousands of stories, and I think it has helped me so much to recognize that humans are not perfect, that we shouldn't be so judgmental. And I think it's also made me realize that you have to look through people's actions and see what's behind those actions. What are the motivations? What's driving that person? What insecurity made that person act that way? What bizarre belief made that person act that way? What unhappiness made that person act that way? And if you see through to what's causing somebody to act the way they're acting, then you won't be angry or resentful when they do that bad thing to you. So I realized I didn't actually have to go and forgive anybody because I've been kind of doing it all along as I've been reading Chicken Soup for the Soul stories. So hopefully this book will be like an instant lesson in that and give people that what I've gotten over 7 years of reading these stories over and over. This book will hopefully get people there so that they can go, done. I've forgiven those three people. I'm done, and now I don't have anything hanging over me.
Very interesting. I've got a joke. I mean, if you're a narcissistic person, what you need to do is buy this book, send it over to the guy or that person that's supposed to forgive you, and then give it some time and call that person up and say, are you ready to ask for my forgiveness?
Well, that would be a way to start. That's a way to start. You know what? Start the conversation.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to forgive you, but the question is, are you ready to ask for my forgiveness?
So let me ask you this, though. Is there anybody out there who's narcissistic who knows they're narcissistic?
I don't know.
I'm
just making a joke. I'm sorry. So tell us about the various categories that you have in the book. I thought they were very interesting. You had mentioned before in the very beginning of the book, it has such wonderful categories, selections to help people in all different aspects of their life. So share that with us, please.
Well, sure. So what happens is when I put a book together, I pick an overall topic, but then I don't have any preconceived notions about what the chapters will be, what the main themes will be. I let the stories tell me, because if I let the stories tell me, I'm doing a better job of reflecting back to our readers what is really important to them. And so here's what the stories told me to do in making the chapters. The stories told me to put the chapters in terms of human relationships. So chapter one is about things going wrong with fathers. So it's about people forgiving their fathers. And chapter two is about forgiveness between mothers and their children. And it goes both ways. It's children forgiving their mothers, usually for being distant, and it's mothers forgiving their children for drug abuse or whatever things their children did. Chapter three is all about relationships that you got through marriage, whether it's in-laws, whether it's stepmothers, stepchildren, stepfathers, whether it's half-siblings, but all those different family relationships that we add to our lives through marriage, we cover in chapter three. And chapter four is probably a really important one around Christmas time. It's about making up with siblings, because, boy, does that happen a lot, these rifts between siblings. And then chapter five is about all the bad things that can happen in love and marriage, because there's a lot of that. So we had a lot of stories about husbands or wives forgiving their spouses for affairs, for being control freaks, for whatever they did to them. And we also have stories about forgiving people in dating relationships. And then in chapter six, we talk about forgiving people who are not in your immediate family, but are your work colleagues, friends who you spend a lot of time with, people who you do volunteer activities or sports with. It was interesting. There were a lot of stories about forgiving colleagues at work, you know, a colleague who stole credit for an idea that was clearly yours, that kind of thing. And then chapter eight was really surprising, and that one really surprised me and is why I never have a preconceived notion. It was people forgiving criminals for heinous crimes, rape, murder. It was amazing how many stories we got from people who forgave rapists or forgave murderers. Then we also have a chapter about just getting lessons about forgiveness from random people who you meet. Even somebody who talked about how she was driving along and she got mad at another driver, and then the other driver kind of smiled and waved. And instead of being like, oh, and you too, you know, and making a gesture. And that she really learned a lesson from that nice person who smiled and waved after she honked her horn at her angrily. And then the last chapter of the book is that chapter about the importance of self-forgiveness, which that psychologist had told me to make sure that I included. So I really appreciate that she did that. So we really cover the whole gamut of human relationships, from people who are very close to you to absolute strangers. And I feel like every single story in this book about the power of forgiveness is a strong story. Every single one has taught me something.
Very interesting. I like the sibling rivalry. I'm just kidding now. You know, this is the holiday season, so I need to send this book to my sister and tell her that. Are you ready to ask for my forgiveness? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you do that. You'll report back to us later how that went.
Hey, I extended the olive branch, okay? I sent your book to her.
Yeah, I thought about that. I thought about sending the power of forgiveness to some people who I know are warring with each other, and then I decided that was not a good idea. Well, actually, if I send it to both of them, let them know they each got it.
Interesting. I selected several stories from the book for talking points. Please give us a short rundown of these stories. They are wonderful stories. These are the ones I thought it was difficult to talk about, but yet it's very interesting. I think it will help a lot of people out there simply because of the times that we're living in right now. The first one is in the category of lessons for forgiving fathers, Finding Dad with Kara Sundlum.
So Kara is really interesting. She was raised by a single mother, and her mom had had a relationship with a man named Bruce Sundlum, who was a very prominent businessman and had disclaimed any responsibility for Kara, who was born in 1975. And so her mom was raising her on her own and had always told her the name of her. And then one day, Kara doesn't know why she looked at the TV. All of a sudden, she woke up and saw on CNN a news anchor announcing that Bruce Sundlum had just lost a close race for governor of Rhode Island. And she said to her mom, "Is that my dad?" And her mom said, "Yes, it is, but I didn't know he was running for governor of Rhode Island because they lived in Michigan. But he must have gone back to Rhode Island where he was from originally." So then she started trying to approach her dad, and he was elected governor of Rhode Island. So there she was in a very public way trying to approach the governor of Rhode Island to get him to take responsibility. But he refused to claim her, and then one day he just all of a sudden changed his mind after she filed a paternity suit, and he said, "Okay, I do." They got a paternity test. It was him. And he said, "Okay, I do accept responsibility. I will pay for college for you, and I'd like you to come and live with me." And she was 17 years old. So she went and lived with her dad, and he was completely transformed. And they had a fabulous relationship, and he was much older than her mom. So she had 18 years with him, and then he died, and she was with him, you know, as he died, and was introduced to her half-siblings. And she didn't put this in the story, but she told me this when I was talking to her, that he hadn't been a great father to his kids through marriage either. And I'm guessing it's because he knew he had this daughter out there who he wasn't treating right, and so he never treated his other kids right. But once he made up with her and took her in, he became a great father to all his other kids as well. And so she said, "I learned it's never too late to heal. Forgiveness is the closest thing I have found to a fairy godmother. Its energy has the magical power to transform us and create the happy ending we so badly want." So I loved her story. I put it right after Anthony's story, right at the beginning of the book.
It's a beautiful story, and I think that's the essence of forgiveness, because you're looking at a situation where it's human relationships. She being daring to go after what she believes is right, and of course the father, rightfully so, being in the position of power, could have easily fought the situation, but realized that over the years, I have to take ownership, a sense of responsibility, and that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, and he did that, and it was a great thing that he did that. And so interesting, because I've known her for years, Kara Sundlin, and I had no idea that was her father. And up in Rhode Island, there's a Bruce Sundlin, like, highway, and, you know, he was a really big deal. So when I found out about this, I said to her, oh, you've got to write the story for our Chicken Soup for the Soul book. And she, in fact, has a whole book about finding her father and having this relationship with him.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. The next story is from the same category, Lessons on Forgiving Fathers, Daddy's Little Girl by Linda Bruno.
Yeah, so this is one about looking past a person's behavior to their motivation. And this woman said that her father was not doing well. She never knew when the next verbal explosion might occur. He would drink a lot on the weekends. He would tell her that she hadn't been wanted, that she was an accident. Well, it turned out that he had PTSD from World War II. But it wasn't until after he died and she went to France and to the Normandy American Cemetery at Omaha Beach that she began to understand her father. And she saw what he had gone through there. And then she realized that his whole life he had been dealing with the horror of that battle where he watched, you know, Americans being slaughtered right next to him. And I'm sure he had some survivor guilt. I mean, that was just a horrible battle to be at. She said he used to get drunk and then just start ranting about being a Marine and fighting in what was considered one of the bloodiest battles of World War II. And so once she understood how traumatized he was by that, she was able to put all of his behavior in perspective and forgive him. And so now she says it's 20 years after his death, but she now feels good about being his daughter.
It's such a wonderful story, and I chose that story simply because of a couple of things. I was reminded by my Italian foster mom, Carol, who told me that when Ben came back from World War II, he was not the same person. And it's difficult to explain to people what that means. Even though Ben was a wonderful person, but I guess from an intimate standpoint of view, back then, there's no such thing as PTSD.
Right. And even now, not everybody is treated for it, and it's a very big problem.
Right, right. I thought this story is important, and especially right now when we have so many of our fellow citizens, brothers and sisters that are in harm's way and have experienced such traumatic experiences serving our country.
Yeah, it was a very dramatic example of how we need to treat everybody who has PTSD, and we need to first diagnose it. We have to recognize that it's there affecting people.
Mm-hmm. The next section is Forgiveness Between Mothers and Children, Mary's Girl by Ruth Logan.
So Ruth was raised by an alcoholic mother, and Ruth didn't even understand how poverty-stricken they were until she was about 12 when she realized that some of her neighbors were shunning her and the other kids in her family, and others were saying, come and eat with us, you know. But her mom was an alcoholic and really wasn't raising her kids well at all. She was locked away in the dark, the apartment was filthy, they didn't have food. And then one day, I really admire, because she was like, it's interesting, as a little girl, she started to clean her own room. She took charge of one room and she scrubbed it from top to bottom. She made her bed, she washed her floor every week, she dusted her broken dresser. She really tried to maintain order in one little corner of this house with this alcoholic mother. Anyway, one day this girl, Ruth, came across her mother's poetry, and she saw that her mother, as a teenager, had been instrumental in starting a high school literary magazine and had written beautiful poetry. And all of a sudden, she saw her mother as a real person, not as this alcoholic. And that was a turnaround for her, and she started forgiving her mother because she knew there was a real person hiding underneath that alcoholic shell. And it turned out that her mother eventually did quit drinking. When Ruth was 33 years old,
mm-hmm.
her mother stopped drinking and became a good mother to her, a grandmother to her children. And so she said, you know, but I thought it was really interesting that she recognized that her mom was a real person when she found her teenage poetry. It was a very moving story.
What is interesting about the story is the fact that sometimes when you're so close to someone, which obviously with your parents, you're only seeing them for that moment in time. Living in the present moment can be taxing because you're not looking at the past, and obviously you're too young to kind of focus on what the future may be. Or in this case, what you see right now is obviously what you're going to get tomorrow as well. To me, this story gives us an opportunity to reflect back on the past, because it is important to understand the past, because the past is a wonderful reference for what the future can possibly be.
It's really good to understand the past because it helps mm-hmm. you to forgive and understand the person who is in your present. And the mm-hmm. next story that I know that you thought was really interesting is Challenge by Kate
yes.
Connor Pliska. And that's that chapter about family you get through marriage. And in this case, it was a stepmother for Kay, and Kay was really miserable with her stepmother, who was very critical, and every time she thought that something good was happening with her stepmother would end up ruining it for her. Like one time they went for a walk in the woods, and they were exploring trails and collecting wildflowers, and Kay was so excited that she was actually having fun with her stepmother, and she started jabbering about how much fun they were having, and her stepmother looked at her and said, "Stop gushing." So she was just very cold and critical all the time, and it was just so disheartening for this young girl. And then the young girl went to her aunt and said, "Could I come and move in with you?" And her aunt sat her down and told her about how her stepmother had been raised and how her stepmother's mom had died when her stepmother was just a little kid. Then her brother had died, and her stepmother had been put in an orphanage. And then her stepmother had gotten pregnant and lost her job because she was, you know, an unmarried mother.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the fact is that she all of a sudden realized that her stepmother had had a horrible life and didn't know how to be affectionate. And so from then on, Kay treated her stepmother differently. She tried to be more understanding. And she didn't take it personally anymore. When her stepmother was cold or distant, she decided that she wasn't going to be a victim. Those were her stepmother's problems, so she wasn't going to let them become her problems. And then, when her stepmother was much older and closer to the end of her life, she told Kay that her father had molested her. Her stepmother's father had molested her. And the reason she had gone to an orphanage was because her father had been sent to jail. And then she really understood what had driven her stepmother to be so cold and distant and so afraid of having a close relationship over all those years. So that was a really interesting story, again, making the point you need to understand what's behind the behavior of the person
right.
who you feel is treating you incorrectly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So true. The next section, this is what I've been fooling around with all morning, Catching Up Ruth with Your Siblings, Moving Past the Past by Charles Earl Harrell.
Yeah, so the sibling thing, of course, is very important. And here you have a case where Charles relates how he was constantly fighting with his sister as they were growing up. And I read what they did, and I thought it was kind of funny, but
mm-hmm.
he and his sister didn't see it with a sense of humor, like that thing where you're both sitting in the back seat of the car and you know, your mom creates like a buffer zone and you start marching fingers over the buffer zone to torment your sibling and all the things they used to do to each other, some of which I found highly amusing. But they didn't find it amusing, and their relationship got worse and worse. And then they were fighting over something that was left from their mother's belongings. They were fighting over who had a certain painting. And things were just getting really bad. And so Charles started to avoid family gatherings because he just couldn't stand the bickering anymore. And then he finally decided, you know what? we just have to forget about all the fighting and start fresh. Just say the fighting never happened. We're not going to discuss it because we're never going to resolve it. I'm going to put a line in the sand, and on this new side of the sand, we're going to just start fresh. And so he suggested to his sister that they take each other out to dinner on their birthdays, and they wouldn't give each other gifts. They wouldn't talk about past issues. They wouldn't tease each other. They would just have a pleasant dinner and some friendly conversation, even if it was superficial. And so they started doing that, and each year it became a little bit easier, and now they actually look forward to seeing each other. And this had just been hanging over him, this relationship with his sister being so bad. And he ends his story by saying, forgiveness is a powerful force. It can release people from a prison of bitterness and resentment, because that holds them captive. And he said, it doesn't take two to forgive. One is enough to begin the process. He said he never asked his sister to forgive him. He just decided that he would forgive her. And that was enough to free him and change his life and his relationship with her. Imagine the relief he felt that now he could go to family gatherings again and everything would be okay. That's really powerful.
It is. It was a wonderful story. In my sister's case and me, I'm just kidding. I mean, we have a wonderful relationship. She knows I like to pick on her a lot. We get along very, very well. I love my sister very much. A shout out to her, Link, in Malaysia. I love you. I picked this story because I thought it was funny, picking on each other and so forth. So.
I thought what he did was funny. The time he set up his toy train and he set it up, he crept into his sister's room while she was sleeping. He set up these train tracks, and then he sent his toy train into her room, and he made the engine, you know, beep.
Yeah, yeah.
Toot its horn right when it got next to her bed so it would wake her up. Of course, she woke up screaming, and then the train set was confiscated from him, and he never saw it again. But I thought that was really funny. That took a lot of work.
It does. I tell you, when I was growing up, I was my sister's nightmare, believe me.
Most people end up being great friends and just laughing about how they treated each other as young siblings.
The next chapter is When Bad Things Happen in Love and Marriage. Forgiveness is Possible by Karen Pott.
Yeah, so Karen had a really interesting story because she got a call from her ex-husband, who she did not get along well with, but he called to tell her that he was dying of cancer. And she had just found out that day that she was selling her house. So she decided that she would move in with her ex-husband, with her two teenage children, because this would be their last opportunity to get to know their father, and she could help take care of him as he died. So even though she had a lousy relationship with him, she decided to take this risk and move in with him. And over the course of the 10 months that she lived with her ex-husband, she learned how to forgive him. He was still a control freak. He was still very difficult to be with, but she decided to stop judging him. And maybe because she wasn't married to him anymore, she could distance herself a little and take his behavior a little less personally. And as she forgave him, their house filled with peace. There was no more fighting. And just a few weeks before he passed, he turned to her and he said, I love you. And she, without even thinking, said, I love you too. And then she was stunned as she realized what she had just said. But then she realized she did love him, but not as her husband. But she loved him as the father of her children and somebody who she could care about as a person. And it was time to let go of their bad history so that they could move on, her with the rest of her life and him with a peaceful passing. And so that's what she did. And I thought that was an amazing story because you hardly ever hear about something like that happening, where the wife moves back in with the ex-husband to help him out as he's dying.
It's a beautiful story, and it really is a moving story. And the next one is a moving story in a very special way, in the same category, When Bad Things Happen in Love and Marriage, The Path to Wholeness by Annalee Davis.
Yeah, so Annalee had a situation that a lot of women end up in, especially women who are not newly married, but, you know, back 20 years ago or so, men who were gay were not necessarily as self-aware or were just trying really hard not to acknowledge their true feelings. And so they would get married, and then often the marriages wouldn't be that great. And then they would eventually, you know, come clean and they would get divorced. And I know people who did that who get along great with their mm-hmm. ex-wives. But in this case, she was really upset. She wanted to kill her ex-husband. And she says she wanted revenge. And she daydreamed about ramming her car into the front steps of the house mm-hmm. where her ex-husband now lived. And she was going to a therapist, and her therapist said, you know why you're holding on to all this anger? It's because it's all you have left of your relationship. You're not willing to end the relationship. So instead of accepting the fact that your marriage is over and moving on, you're staying angry so you can still have a relationship with your ex-husband, mm-hmm. as flawed as that relationship is. And she realized that the therapist was absolutely true, and that she was holding on to the anger and resentment because she feared there would be nothing left of her relationship if she let that go. And so she said, I am going to forgive him. And then when she freed herself from this burden of anger, she realized how it had been weighing her down. And she said, and I'm quoting now, she said, I flourished. I went back to college after 23 years. I finished my bachelor's degree. Then I got a master's degree. And she said that it's amazing how much better her life got when she became self-aware enough to understand why she was holding on to that resentment. And that's a really interesting thing for people to look at in themselves as they're reading this book. Look at why you're holding on to anger and resentment towards a certain person. Is that your new relationship with that person? Is that the only way you're having a relationship, by having that anger and resentment? Or do you fear that if you forgive the person, you won't have the relationship anymore? Mm-hmm. Because she realized that's what she was doing to herself. And she was hurting herself, not him. He didn't right. care. He had moved on with his life. She was the one who was stuck in the past.
Yeah, yeah. This story is truly the classic thing about not letting go. And, of course, it's pride. No one can blame her for that. But there should be an ending to that grieving period or whatever period that we go through in life. Anger period, I guess, in this case. For you to live, you have to move on.
That's right. So I thought that was a great story. I was very happy mm-hmm. to include that. We did get a lot of stories from people who had a spouse who ended up deciding that they were gay, and then the spouse had to forgive them for that. So we did see that a lot. It happens a lot.
The next section is forgiving friends and colleagues. The story is Golden Glitter by Beth Sadeti.
So Beth's story is a very common story these days, unfortunately. It's mm-hmm. about a mother whose daughter commits suicide and who had been bullied a lot. And her daughter had left some journals where the mother was reading about different kids who had been bullying the daughter. And the mother was going through her first Thanksgiving without her daughter. The doorbell rang, and she saw a classmate of her daughter's, and it happened to be one of the classmates who her daughter had said in her journal was bullying her. And the classmate stood there with tears streaming down her cheeks, and she was holding out a handmade ornament for a Christmas tree because the mom had posted on Facebook that she was making a Christmas tree in honor of her daughter, and inviting people to design heart ornaments to put on the tree. And so this girl had made a heart ornament, handed it to the mom, crying, and ran down back to her car where her dad was waiting for her because this girl felt so bad that she had been a part of the bullying. And then after Christmas on January 2nd, which was the one-year anniversary of her daughter's death, the girl showed up again with a dozen yellow roses. And the mom brought the girl inside this time, gave her a hug, wrapped her arms around her, and said, if you ever want to talk, I'll listen. And so the mom forgave the girl. And it was an incredible story that the mom could be so big-hearted and forgive one of the bullies who her daughter said had driven her to suicide.
Just a very powerful story. It's just perfect for this time of the year.
It is, and it just shows how people can summon up the strength within themselves mm-hmm. to forgive just about anybody. I mean, this mm-hmm. mother even forgave the girl who had bullied her daughter and was one of the girls who her daughter cited as being responsible for her decision to commit suicide.
Yeah.
Mom forgave the girl. So I thought that was very, very moving.
The next category is when a crime has been committed. The Greatest Gift by Immaculée Ibargiza.
So she is, Immaculée is very famous. She's actually with the United Nations now. She's one of the faces of the Rwandan genocide. And she was one of two survivors from her family. What happened was the president of Rwanda killed in 1994 when his plane was shot down. Mm-hmm. And what happened was the Hutus, who were the majority population in Rwanda, came out and said that everybody should go and kill all of the Tutsis, which is ridiculous. So there were 7 million Hutus and a little more than a million Tutsis, and the 7 million Hutus were told to pick up machetes and go and kill all of the Tutsis. And so there was this mass genocide in Rwanda. And Immaculée was one of the minority Tutsis. So her father said to her, run to the pastor's house. He is Hutu, so they won't kill him. He is a good man, and he will hide you. Immaculée went and was crammed for the next 3 months into a tiny bathroom, 4 feet by 3 feet, with 7 other Tutsi women. It was so cramped, they all had to stand up in this bathroom for 3 months, just leaning against each other. And the pastor slid a big piece of furniture in front of the door so the Hutus wouldn't see that there was a door. And they stayed in there for 3 months. The pastor was passing food into them when he could. But he couldn't give them much because he couldn't let it be seen that he was consuming more food than one person would consume. So they all became very thin during those 3 months. But anyway, they survived. And when she came out of hiding in that bathroom, she discovered that had been shot. Her mother had been hacked to death. Her youngest brother had been machine gunned to death. Her older brother had his head chopped open. And one of her brothers had survived because he had been away at school in a different country. So she and her brother were the only ones who survived from their whole family. And after the whole genocide was over and there was a period of reparation and retribution, she was invited to go to the prison to meet the man who had murdered her mother and her older brother. And when she got to the prison, she saw this man lying on the floor, hungry, in rags, incredibly ashamed by what he had done. And instead of kicking him like a dog, which is what she was supposed to do, she leaned over to him and she said, I forgive you. And the jailer was furious. He said, what are you doing? That man murdered your family. I brought him here so you could spit on him. How could you forgive him? And she said, hatred has taken everything I ever loved from me, and forgiveness is all I have left. And she says that she turned and walked out of that prison free of anger and hatred, and she has lived as a free woman ever since. That Rwandan genocide was one of the most awful incidents in history. And I thought it was really powerful to have Dory, and I used this story as the first one in our chapter about forgiving criminals.
Yeah.
And as I told you before, we had so many stories about people forgiving murderers and rapists. I don't know if I could do that. I mean, what she did was incredible. But I guess she lived through it. She knew that was the only way she could get on with her life.
I agree with your assessment. I think it's interesting to read about someone else's decision-making and someone else's story. But if it happened to us, I don't know. I agree with you. I think I have to wait for that moment.
You'd have to wait and see.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes a lot of strength to do that, but it takes a lot of self-awareness, too. She was very wise.
Yeah.
Because if she had held on to that hate and hated all the Hutus, well, then she wouldn't have accomplished anything versus the situation they had before in Rwanda.
Yeah,
Hutus and Tutsis were married to each other. And then they were being told to turn on each other. It would be like if Catholics and Protestants were told to turn on each other, who were married to each other. I mean, that's how ridiculous it was.
Right.
So she did the right thing. I'd like to think that we would do the right thing, too, if we were ever in that situation, and hopefully we never will be.
It's easy to read about someone else. I think when it comes to oneself, my inclination is to forgive, but then I don't know. You're right in commending her in terms of she's actually a lot stronger than people think.
Yeah, and the next one in this chapter that I know you want to talk about by Erin Austin is about a woman who forgives a rapist. And in her story, A New Beginning, she talks about how, first of all, she had suppressed her memory or repressed her memory of the rape because it happened when she was 8 years old, and it took years of therapy for it to come out. And she was frozen during all those years. And as an adult, when she finally faced the memory, that was the only way she could get through it, was by reliving the rape, facing the memory, and then she actually went and forgave the rapist. And she said that the day she forgave the rapist, she became a new person. She said courage and strength a person can ever do. But she said it was also a victory over him because she was reclaiming her life from him. And basically, he was vermin, right? But she forgave him and she rose above him. She said, "You're vermin. You can't help but be vermin. And now I'm going to forgive you and get on with my life, because if I don't forgive you, you are going to continue to control my life. And I'm taking my life back from you." And so it was a form of revenge for her to say, "You're a worthless piece of vermin and I'm going to forgive you now because you're not even good enough to know what you did wrong." And so that's how she reclaimed her life.
So true. It's a powerful statement that she made. The next chapter is The Importance of Self-Forgiveness, The Mistake That Wasn't by Margaret Naba.
So this is a really good story because it may help some of our readers who are in the same situation. Margaret Naba had gotten pregnant back in the mid-1960s, when it was really considered bad to be a single mother. And so her family had basically made her move out. Even when she was in labor, her mother wouldn't drive her to the hospital. She made her drive herself to the hospital. She had the baby. She immediately gave the baby up for adoption, and then she regretted it every day for the next 28 years. She worried about her son. She said a day didn't go by that she didn't think about him. What did he look like? Was he happy? Did his parents love him? And then, when her son was almost 28 years old, she got a telephone call from the adoption agency saying that he wanted to make contact with her. And she was thrilled, and she said she met him at the agency. They hugged each other. They cried. They talked. He had been placed in a wonderful home with two brothers and two sisters, all adopted. His parents were fabulous. And her son had never resented her. He had always forgiven her for giving him up. He said to her, "I know it must have been hard, but you did everything you could to make sure I had a good life." And so she could finally forgive herself after 28 years of beating herself up over this. So I thought that was a really powerful story. And Margaret actually went on to become a successful novelist. We've published stories from her before, and I'm very honored to have her in our books.
It's a beautiful story, and it's a story about adoption, because I know sometimes when you are adopted, you have lots of questions in mind. Were you not loved? And so forth. And that's a tough decision that you have to make on your own, but always remember that. Look at where you're at. Most probably the people that adopted you do a much better job for you than any other situation that you look at.
Oh, yes. The women who give up their babies for adoption are making a really difficult decision, and they're making that decision from love. They're giving up the baby because they're hoping the baby will have a better life with someone else, and it's really hard. And you have to admire women who make that decision after carrying a baby for 9 months. And I don't know of any kids who resent the fact that they were given up for adoption. I think they realize the sacrifice that their mother has made for them.
There are some people that sort of question certain things, the initial reaction, but then when you look past that, then you realize, wait a minute now, there are reasons for everything. Look at the situation you're in right now, because you're in a family that loves you very, very much.
Yeah, and that mother gave up that child. That's a really tough thing to do.
The poem that you have in the book, that's just beautiful. Can you recite that for us, please? the
road
ahead.
Yeah, we got this
ahead.
Really great poem, and usually I don't publish poetry that's just poetry and doesn't tell a story, but mm-hmm. I had to make an exception in the case of this short poem because I think this poem says it all. So here it is. It's called The Road Ahead. It's by Christina Gaglione. Anger begets anger. Rage stumbles forward, steamrolling good as well as bad on the road ahead. Forgiveness begets forgiveness. Peace shines from above, nurturing all that is precious on the road ahead. She makes such a great point. This poem about how anger only causes more anger and rage only causes you to continue stumbling forward in your life, steamrolling the good as well as the bad. Mm-hmm. Then she says, but forgiveness brings peace, nurturing. That puts you correctly on the road ahead. I thought it was a great poem and a great way to end our wonderful book about the power of forgiveness.
I agree with that. It's such a beautiful poem, and I'm so glad that you included it in the book. What story moved you the most?
Well, there was one called Heavenly Forgiveness by a man named Mark Rickerby, and I recently met Mark in Los Angeles. And, of course, mm-hmm. it's always nice to know the people who have written the stories. He had an older brother named Paul who had a very troubled life and became a drug addict and a criminal and was on heroin, spent 8 years in jail for drug-related offenses, including the burglary of a pharmacy. And Mark was very resentful of his brother for causing all of this trouble in their family and hurting the whole family. And he just, you know, really couldn't forgive his brother for doing this. And then his brother died. And Mark felt guilty for two reasons. One, because he had never forgiven his brother for the pain that he had caused the family. And two, Mark couldn't forgive himself for not being there for his brother at the end. He couldn't stop thinking that maybe he had abandoned mm-hmm. his brother and that had added to his brother's pain and made him take the drug overdose that caused his death. So about a month or so after his brother died, Mark had a dream. And in the dream, Paul came to him and said, don't beat yourself up anymore. Stop torturing yourself. Of course I forgive you. You didn't do anything wrong. I made the mistakes, not you. You were just trying to save me. And he knew it was a dream, but he really felt like his brother had come to him in that dream. And his brother looked healthy again, clean. And so he woke up from that dream, not knowing if it was just a dream or if it was really some kind of communication from his brother. But it completely cleared everything out for him, and it allowed him to move forward with his life. So it was a great example of patching up a rift with a sibling and also of self-forgiveness.
That's a wonderful story. I read that. Again, you have so many wonderful stories in the book, and it's very touching and moving. I strongly recommend that people buy this book because it will certainly help you in looking at your own personal situation.
That's what we try to do at Chicken Soup for the Soul. Every book is designed to help people, and this is a topic we've never done before, the power of forgiveness.
Yeah.
And I just think it's an amazing topic. And we do get stories about the power of forgiveness in our other books, but we've never made a volume before that was just stories about the power of forgiveness. And it really taught me a lot. It opened my eyes to a lot of what goes on in human relationships mm-hmm. and how they can be made better.
Very interesting. What can we expect from Chicken Soup in 2015?
You can expect more powerful books from us in 2015. I was just looking over the list the other day, actually, mm-hmm. and talking to one of the salesmen who sells our books to the bookstores, and we were marveling at how powerful they are. So we're going to have a book coming out in February called Chicken Soup for the Soul, Hope and Miracles, which is fabulous book. We have a foreword by John Edward, the psychic medium.
Mm-hmm.
And these are awesome stories about faith, answered prayers, divine intervention, hope, not giving up hope. Then we're going to have a really great story in this, a really great book in the spring called Chicken Soup for the Soul, Thanks to My Mom. And my co-author on that book is Jody Messina, who's a big mm-hmm. country music star. And she's one of those sandwich generation people. She's raising young kids, and she's also taking care of her elderly mother who lives with her now. So that's going to be a terrific book. We're also doing a book about the joy of adoption. That's coming out at the end of March. And we have a number of really powerful books. We're going to have a book later in 2015 called Think Possible, which I expect to be a very powerful book. Oh, and you'll love this. In the summer of 2015, we're going to put out a book about dreams and premonitions, because we get so many great stories. I think this is a topic we've never done as a standalone book.
People, we
get so many great stories about people having dreams, and in the dreams they realize something. They have an epiphany, or they realize, oh, I have to go do that. But in their dreams, I don't know if it's intuition or divine intervention, but something happens, and in the dreams they realize a course of action they should take, or they think about a person they haven't seen in 20 years, and then they see the person the next day. So that's going to be a powerful book. So I'm very excited about our schedule for 2015.
Fantastic. Those sounds like wonderful, wonderful bestsellers to me.
Let's hope so.
I'm sure they will be. Well, it is that time of the hour. What holiday recipe for living would you like to share with our listeners this morning?
Well, I think since we are in this holiday period, and then we're going to be entering our new year, new you period, when we all need to think about what we want to do better, I'd like to talk about five tips that I got from Chicken Soup for the Soul, The Power of Forgiveness. And the first one is to ask yourself, are you only hurting yourself by being angry? Second is, ask yourself, is holding onto the past and all those resentments preventing you from moving forward? Because you're the one who's important. It doesn't matter what that other person did. If you're hurting yourself by holding onto those resentments, then just stop it, because it's your life that's important. Third tip is to ask yourself the following. Are you blaming that other person for something that they had a motivation to do, you don't understand what motivated it, and should you take that into account so that you can let go of the resentment and anger? Another tip is, are you blaming yourself for something that was out of your control? That's in the self-forgiveness category. You know, if you were in an auto accident and somebody got hurt, but it wasn't your fault, you slid on black ice, stop beating yourself over it. It wasn't in your control. Another tip is to ask yourself, are you in a prison of your own making? Is hatred holding you captive? So those are the tips that I would say are great recipes for living, for moving into the new year, new you, and shedding the anger and resentment that might be holding you back.
Thank you for the wonderful recipes for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. A very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and your loved ones.
Thank you, and you too, and especially to your sister.
Thank you so much. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Asher Fox. He is a fitness expert and author of the best-selling book, Fat to Fearless, Enjoy Permanent Weight Loss and End Emotional Eating for Good. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening, and have a blessed week, and happy holidays. Bye-bye.